Welcome back to the second hour of the Simmons Car Care Shop Talk Show right here on ESPN, Tucson.com. 1490 AM, 94.9 HD4 FM. And I'm Jerry Simmons, your host, along with me, my co-host, Jim Mooney, which is Frontier Towing, Mr. Frontier Towing, been there and towed that. This portion of the show is sponsored by Spectre Minor Road Auto Collision, 4425 West Ina, 520-744-4454. If you need an excellent body shop for collision, or just want it painted, or just want to, you're buying a car and just want it fixed up. But Spectre Minor Road Auto Collision, 520-744-4454. Merle's Automotive, you weekend warriors. Merle's Automotive. They've got 10 spots in Tucson, Arizona. They've got them scattered out all around the state. So if you're out running and you break down and you're out in Morenci or Globe, Casa Grande, Green Valley, you know, Sierra Vista, or in Tucson, go to merlesauto.com. And they will tell you exactly where you can do that on smartphone. I do it all the time. Do it on smartphone. You can find out where a store is open. And they're really good. Their counter people are excellent. And they also have a little machine shop. They can make hoses. They sell tools. They sell lifts and stuff like that. And they have their own financing arrangements. So you got just about everything at Merle's Auto. So just go to merlesauto.com and look it up, and you'll be happy. Of course, we got Frontier Towing, Jim Mooney, 520-748-1100. Write that number down. Put it in your dash. Put it on your dash. Put it on in your shirt pocket or whatever you want to do. But carry your emergency numbers with you and put them on one card, and then you'll have your insurance. You'll have towing. Who's going to tow the car out, who your insurance company is, the phone number, and your in case of. In other words, in case you can't make a phone call, have that little list where somebody finds it and you say, oh, okay, so this is your spouse, or this is your kid, or this is who you call in case of an emergency. That's ICE, I-C-E, in case of emergency. So have all that written down, then you'll be happier. It works a lot better, too. Lynn's Auto Brokerage, lynnsautobrokerage.com. That's a bunch of used cars. The website has everything. All their inventory is listed on lynnsautobrokerage.com. And desertrv.com, and they specialize in toy haulers and RVs, you know, stuff like that. So you can find it by going on the website at desertrv.com or lynnsautobrokerage.com. So there, now I'm out of trouble again. All right, good. All right, now, what were we talking about before you got sidetracked, Jim?
We were talking about oil pressure on the side of the freeway and systems in cars that are difficult to diagnose. And it's 64 today. 60. Oh, by the way, it's Super Safe Saturday. Let me forget my Super Safe Saturday, Jerry.
Yeah, there you go.
It's Super Safe Saturday. That means move over, slow down. No texting and driving. No drinking and driving. That move over, slow down means move over somebody on the side of the road. That's a car parked on a car with flashing lights. That means mom's grocery getter, the dad's RV. That means law enforcement. That means fire. You move over so you don't strike them. Don't get near them. That also means move over for bicycle guys. Whether you like them or not, move over for them. Trust me, it's totally worth it. Pedestrians and dog walkers. Again, it's totally worth it. Just do it. If you're working on your car, or no texting and driving, right? We said that no TikToking, no YouTubing while you're driving down the road. I can't believe people actually do it, but, you know, stop it. Just saying, stop it. If you're working on your car, remember your jack stands, your wheel chocks, your safety glasses, your gloves, hood prop. Put your keys in your pocket on the so you don't lock your keys in the door, and disconnect your batteries if you're working on the electrical. But safety glass. Safety glass and gloves and wheel chocks. Don't stand in front of the car either. So I think that's all. I think that's everything, Jerry. At any rate, so we were talking about that. You know, we're talking about a lot of things. It's going to be about 65 today, but you know, it's going to be a 90 by the end of the week. 90 degrees by the end of the week. So when you're the reason why we talk about doing inspections, 90 degrees means it's going to get hot. You know what happens when it gets hot? Things break. Here to tell you, hot weather is very hard on cars. So issues that were not a problem prior to 100-degree weather become a problem. Jerry can attest to this all day long. You know, hoses, belts, tires. Oh, my gosh, tires galore. You know, if you think the tires are marginal, you might want to start thinking. No, not to want to start thinking. Set them aside some time and go get them replaced. Because if they're marginally bad, if they're going to be bad, they show cracks in them. It's time to throw them away. I know don't take them home with you. You don't need them at your house. You're not going to use them for anything. They don't make good planters. They don't make good anything. Just buy new tires and throw the ones away. It's like air filters and oil filters. You don't need them. So, but as we approach 100-degree weather, this stuff is going to raise its ugly head. And Jerry and I both know that that's going to happen. And it's happened how long have you been doing this, Jerry? 40 years? And it happens 50. Every year, doesn't it? 50 years. And it happens every year. Every year we do the same thing. I know it seems crazy, but we do the same thing over and over again. We have cars that get hot and break down. On the plus side, we get a whole bunch of new drivers that don't know how to drive and don't know how to take care of cars. So the problems are exacerbated. And, of course, you know, like anybody that's new to a new system, you know, if you're learning how to use a computer or learning how to use a phone, and when you learn how to drive a car, you learn about all the things that go with it. So luckily for us, we get to teach people what should take place and how to take care of their car so they can kind of save us a little bit of cash, save a little bit of money, and not be broke down on the side of the road. Because that's really what it's after, folks. If you try to just do a little bit of stuff, just like Scott Parker Automotive said, just like Jerry says, and everybody says, just try and do a little bit and get a little educated. If you get a little educated about what's going on, you will have a much better luck. If you want to do the stick your head in the sand thing, or if you want to fight driving because you don't like it and everything about your being makes you hate driving your vehicle, then the likelihood of you doing good work to your car is going to be low. And then you're going to be even more frustrated when you haven't done anything to the car because you're so against it. And I don't care if you drive gas or electric, you got to work on it. Stuff has to be taken care of. and you need to know what the particular vehicle needs. Electric vehicles need different maintenance than gas vehicles. People say they don't need maintenance. They do need maintenance. You know how I know they need maintenance? Because we tell them every day. Just like you need maintenance on yourself. Everything needs to have a little bit of work done to it all the time. So again, back to the original statement. So things go wrong. Systems break. They wear out. They get hot. And as we approach the 90-degree weather at the end of this week, things are going to start to rear their ugly head. Then it's going to cool off, and you're going to say, oh, well, it's okay. It just happened that one time. It was okay that one time. And then wallop. We're going to come back around. We're going to hit 100 degrees, and it's going to smack you in the head. And you're going to go, here I am. I'm back to stay for good. I'm the problem. I'm here to stay, and here we are. And I don't really care what the problem is. It's going to show up. It's going to rear its ugly head, and you're going to be, you know, mad. You're going to be unhappy. You're going to be unhappy because you're going to be like, wow, I should have taken care of that. Well, you know, that's what we have to do. So, again, as we start to get towards the 100-degree weather, start looking at your car. Start doing some investigative work. I know that there's a ton of stuff in the way. I know there's a ton of stuff that needs to be looked at. If you don't know what to do, seek out Jerry. Seek out the guys at Parker. Seek out Brian over at Automotive Specialist. Say, hey, I think there's an issue here. You know, seek out whoever. Seek out somebody that you know. Seek out a relative. Seek out a dad. Seek out a brother. Seek out somebody who, or seek out mom. Hell, mom. Today, mom probably knows better than dad. So, seek out somebody who has a clue, and start addressing an issue. You know, at least you know about it. At least if you know that something's going to take place, you're prepared. And then if you think, oh, well, the tires, you know, got big chunks out of it and I can get by for a few more days, okay, maybe you can. You know, maybe that's your cue. Well, my tires are old and they're worn and they're kind of out of date. I think I can drive them around town. And if they fail around town, I'm not out on the freeway. Okay, well, at least that's a little proactive. I mean, I would recommend getting them replaced, but, you know, maybe that's the timing is just not right. But at least if you took the time to mitigate the loss, you'll be much happier. So you get a flat tire and you have to pull into a parking lot. All right, nearly so bad as getting a flat tire on the interstate. Trust me, folks. Flat tires on the interstate are bad, really bad. Flat tires, and Jerry can tell you this, like I can tell you this, blowouts at 75 miles an hour cause a lot of damage. Even if you don't have a crash or a collision, that tire flopping around will wreak all kinds of havoc with the body of your car. It will grab wires. It will rip them out. It will grab brake lines and rip them off. It will take fenders and shred them into an oblivion. I know, sounds crazy, but it'll do it.
Absolutely.
I towed one the other day. The guy was driving. It was a commercial vehicle. Let's just go with that. Commercial vehicle, and the probably doing 30 miles an hour. Not an excessive amount of speed. The tire blew out on the front. It ripped the hood off. The hood is about, on the truck, is probably anywhere from $8,000 to $12,000. Did you know the tire was going to blow out? I don't know. But it's the kind of damage that happens. A little fender on a Honda Civic, you know, Call Javier over at Spectrum. He'll tell you, oh, well, yeah, it needs a fender, an inner fender well. Probably needs a headlight assembly now. Well, probably needs a front bumper cover, you know, because you tore it off. Oh, well, you're into it $4,000 to start. You know, maybe it damaged the door. You know, you're like, great. Well, I can't do all that. I'll just put a tire on there and fix the brake line that got ripped off. That at 75 miles an hour is amplified 100-fold. And that's now you've got a bunch of body damage and a rim damage and potentially if you go off the side of the road, now you got front suspension damage, so tie rod ends, rack and pinions, oh my gosh, electric rack and pinions today, folks. You have a failure on a tire at 70 miles an hour, you're going to be buying a rack and pinion. They cannot take the stress. They're not designed to take that kind of shock load. Again, how do I know this? Well, because we drag them to body shops all day long, and they put them in there. What's an electric rack and pinion cost these days, Jerry? $500? Oh, no. Hey, wait. I'm sorry. $2,000.
There you go.
$2,000. Yeah, you're sitting there thinking, hold up. $2,000 plus install plus calibration. What? Yeah, you can't just put it in. You got to calibrate it. It has to be calibrated with the self-driving system on the vehicle. It has to be calibrated for the in and out. It has to be calibrated to do all the things that a normal steering wheel will do. No, it doesn't come that way. And no, it's not self-calibrated. You get to go through an alignment and have it fixed. That's why Jerry has a $50,000, what did you say it was, $80,000 alignment rack? Because that's the kind of stuff they have to do. $80,000. Because I can tell you for a fact, not a guess, if Jerry puts a rack and pinion in a car and he doesn't calibrate it and you drive off down the road and crash, he's going to have a problem. So he's going to make sure that doesn't happen. So he's going to take the time to make sure it's done. And you know what? If he can't, let's say you take it to a shop and they don't have that $80,000 machine, he's going to ship it to the guy with the $80,000 machine and have it calibrated. Again, we do them every single day. We move cars around all the time from place to place because they're not drivable. Well, but it's all together. It looks like it should drive just fine. Yeah, until it doesn't steer. That's. I don't know if you've ever been going down the road and had the steering wheel come off in your hands. That used to be the old trick, you know, in the old cars. You could just pop them off. Today, you couldn't pry one off with a freaking crowbar, you know. they are wedged on there like, you know, they're tapered fit, and they are coming off. You need a puller and a half to get them off these days. The old trick of smashing the steering wheel, center of the steering wheel, trying to pull it off, yeah, that don't work either, folks. You got to have a real puller to pull a steering wheel off. But, you know, if you've ever had that steering wheel come off in your hand, that is a frightening experience. Same thing happens with steering gear.
That used to be the thing with race cars when they're building race cars and stuff. You build your old claimers, and you take a steering wheel off, and then you put it back on there, and then you'd, oh, I've got to put a nut on. You put a nut on, hit it with a wind gun. Strip it out. First time you crashed or bumped anything, then it loosened it up, that nut just come right off. And you're sitting there hanging on to the steering wheel. Oh, it's great. It'll wake you up. But, you know, if you're anticipating everything, you can probably get away with it because you're going to be able to just push the steering wheel back on, at least to get it off the track. But that's about where it's going to end. But, yeah, you know, people do a lot of dumb things. But if you want to know dumb things, you're run a race car for a while. I mean, the old theory was, hey, if you crash it, and you got to do body work, get a bigger hammer. But broken suspension components. I'll tell you something. I did not realize until I started racing cars how flimsy factory stuff was on cars. I mean, you go around and you think, wow. And I come from Virginia and Carolina, back there where NASCAR is big. But they would take the street cars and they would think that's a NASCAR. They didn't realize the extra stuff that you put on them just to keep them going around the track consistently. You know, and yeah, you may go around a curve and get away with it one time or twice or three times, and first thing you know, you wind up in somebody's cornfield, a cow pasture, because it didn't. It finally quit. Oh, imagine that. And you look at that thing, and then you look at the race car parts and stuff that you're pulling this junk off, and you're putting race car high temp stuff on it. Man, you're good to go then. People, I'm going to tell you something. The cars that you're driving today are not race cars. You cannot abuse them. You can hit a pothole and change the way the thing drives, the tire wear on it. You can take out a shock, a strut. And there's a lot of potholes. I mean, Tucson is working the hind end off keeping the potholes. And after driving around and showing my brother beautiful Tucson, Arizona for a week, I didn't realize how many potholes were out there. And, you know, but when you look at how much construction is going on around Tucson, and you know that you've got these big trucks traveling these roads. So if you've got a housing complex going on, it's got 30,000 homes or stuff like that, that road is going to have potholes in it and divots and everything else before it's done because of the amount of traffic, heavy duty, coming on that. So I don't get too excited about it. You know, it's just you just need to dodge them. But when you're dodging a pothole on one side, don't run over the guy in the left lane on the other side or the right lane dodging a pothole. It's kind of like a coyote. Coyote comes out in front of you. You're running 45 miles an hour. Don't you take out that line of traffic on the right side to miss that coyote. And I know people say, well, you don't like coyotes. Are you kidding me? I have coyotes come through here daily. I don't shoot them. I don't run them off because they have a part in nature. Somebody's got to help me keep these pack rats from taking my property. And they do a pretty good job of it. I love coyotes. But going down the road, buddy, I'm going to tell you something. If you've got a coyote coming across the road, a javeline or something like that, that's the reason you drive full time. And that's the reason at night, you slow it down a little. Take it down a notch. If you're on the rural roads outside of Tucson or on the county roads, take it down a notch. Hey, I seen 8 deer 2/10 of a mile from my house in Saguaro National Monument, and they were just walking along like they owned that park. And in the middle of the day, it was literally noon, and they were just walking up side, right off the edge of the road, maybe 25, 30 foot, and walking headed north. So that's the same one that you meet at night in the dark. And you got to remember, on an animal, deer and horses, when the lights hit them, their eyes do not adjust to the light as fast as ours do. So when you see them, when you talk about the deer in the headlight, that's what they're referring to. You can get a horse in the headlight too. You blind them. They're temporarily blind. They can't adjust and get out of the way. They don't know what it is. And all they know is they're blind. So they just stand there. So when you're driving down the road and you see these things, you know, take it down. I drive Freeman Road a lot in the evenings around 6:30, 7 o'clock. And speed limit on Freeman Road is some parts of 50, but mostly 45. And, yeah, I'll put down there around 30, depending on how dark it is. And if there's cars behind me, you know, hopefully they'll understand what I'm doing. If they want to get mad about it, so, I don't care. And I am not going to, because I actually run over a baby javelina. And I was running. In fact, I don't even know if I was running 30 miles an hour, but I hit it with a Honda. And it was a little baby. I missed the mama. That was the one that was right in front of it, about 6 foot in front of it. And I thought it was clear. And I was already on the brake. And then so I get off the brake, and then here comes this little squirt across the road right behind mama. And I get back on the brake only to take it out. But so I don't like doing that. You know, I love the outside. I love animals. And I'm not going to take them out intentionally. However, my dog, when I first got her, she's a runner, and I'll swear, if she didn't have a chip in her, she would have been gone a long time ago. It was one of those things like, oh, I love my wife. Sometimes I get so mad at her, I want to pour gasoline on her. And sometimes I get so mad, I want her to light it. Yeah, I heard that on radio here years ago, and I thought, that is absolutely incredible that you'd come up with something like, I never even thought of that. So... But anyway,
you know, it's funny to talk about the deer in the headlight, Jerry. That
yep.
if you've never encountered hitting a large animal with a vehicle, you're lucky. That is something you don't want to do. And when you talk about the deer in the headlights and they just stand there, they don't move. You're 100% right. So when you hit them with the car, you know, they're already 2 feet off the ground or 3 feet off the ground. You knock their legs out, and now their body's coming into your windshield. So it's really, really dangerous. It's really dangerous when you see that large
gross.
Horses, same thing. Cows,
oh man,
same deal.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
And a deer, even if a deer weighs, you know, let's say you get a little deer, and it's, you know, let's say it's a couple hundred pounds, and maybe you get a muley, and maybe it's 400 pounds, right? That flying across the car into the windshield is going to wake you up, and you're going to see all kinds of issues that you're going to, well, if you haven't had if that's not considered an accident, I don't know what is, because you're going to have another one too when you get stopped, because that is probably one of the most scary things I've ever experienced in my life is to have. It's worse than the hood flying up, okay? The hood flies up, you think there's a problem. That deer comes flying into your windshield. You have a serious problem on your hands. And like you said, if you're going slow, you hit one at 50 miles an hour, buddy, it's a problem. And if you hit one at 25, you're still going to have a problem, but not nearly so bad. So, you know, your suggestion of driving a little slower in the rural areas is really good, especially if you have no idea. You know, if you've never been out that way, if you're on your way to... You're talking about deer in Saguaro National Monument. Good. I mean, that's pretty. That's down pretty close. That's pretty close to town. So, and it's not, I mean, that means they're walking around rocking K. That means they're walking around all kinds. That means they're getting down into the Vail area. And out there's the Old Spanish Trail. That road is pretty curvy. You won't even have a chance to see one before you're on top of it. So that's really good advice, right, just to kind of take it real slow as you go through there. I know people like to hit that Mach 9 through that area. I've driven through there, and it could be pretty bad some days. So.
No. Oh.
No, it can't be.
No. I'm talking to a dog that's getting ready to defend me from a woodpecker on top of the fire arrestor on the fireplace. So she's getting ready to jump right in the middle of my lap, so I'm just going to step out here on the porch.
Well, there you go.
All right, now. All right, go ahead.
But, yeah, so at any rate, yeah, so when you're – road hazards out there in the middle of the night, it's incredibly difficult to gauge. You know, and folks, if you haven't switched up to LED headlights or you have the ability to do so, I highly recommend it. LEDs shine; they have the luminosity is better. Even if you're the distance isn't as far, you can just because of the brightness, because they're running 5,000 or 5,800 lumens, you can see so much better. And if you have if you're having an off-road vehicle with some driving lights, although you're not supposed to run them during the day or during the night, but if you can see so much farther with them. So it gives you your reaction time that much better. If you're converting to LEDs, it can be a little expensive, but it's not horribly difficult. Some of them are kind of a bear to change. A Ford F-150, you got to take the tire off to get to it and pull the fender well cover out. But other than that, they're not too horrible to do. If you're going to do turn signals, you need to make sure that you reprogram the body control module to accept the no load light, or you need to change the flasher to accept no load light bulbs. But headlights and taillights, if you have the ability, headlights in particular, taillights, you know, are nice. They drop significantly less power, so you don't see those burned and crusty wires, especially Fords and Chevys have a real problem with in their taillights. The older model ones, you know, 2002 through 2014 or something, they get that halogen light that gets really hot and burns the wires. So those are nice to change out. But headlights themselves, you would be amazed how much difference it really makes. And I fought it for years. I wouldn't do it. You know, I was like, nope, I'm not going to. And one day I just broke down and said, you know, I'm tired of fixing these things. I'm tired of not being able to see through the yellow light. And so I changed them out, and I was amazed how much better I could see. On top of that, if you have your plastic headlight covers are all yellow and foggy, no matter what you got in there, it isn't going to work. So if you have your your plastic headlights that need to be reconditioned, you can go up and see Javier, and he can do that, or find a headlight guy that can do it, or I know I hate to say it, throw them away and buy some new ones, because that itself will be completely amazed how well a clear plastic headlight lens will do you. It's amazing, and you don't think about it over time. They degrade slowly. Slowly they fade to where, you know, oh, it doesn't look too bad. You know, the light comes out of it, but boy, if they're bright and clear, it's truly amazing. It really is. So coupled by an LED, you have a really good light system, and they're nice to use. And if you can get them reconditioned, by all means do so. That little procedure is they kind of give them a real fine sanding paper, and they sand all the white off, all the basically the oxidation. They sand them to where they're smooth, and then they wipe them down. But I think they use an acetone or a chemical that helps move the get rid of the scratches, and it Mm-hmm. It's really, really amazing how well that system actually works and how much better you will like the device at night. You'll be like, wow, I can actually see. It's like cleaning off your glasses.
Well, didn't they come up one time and say you lose like 21% of the luminosity or whatever it is when you have that cover on it?
Yeah, I think it's more
or
like
70%.
More? Yeah, I think it's more. When they turn yellow, I think it's like 70%. When they get yellow, I think it's like 70%.
So, yeah, depending on how bad they are. But
depending on how bad they are, yeah.
Yes.
It's a lot.
I mean, you think you're going blind. You think you're going blind, and you're not. Your headlights are just covered up.
Well,
but,
and you can't see very far. You can
get them done.
15 feet. You can only see 15 feet in front of you, and after 15 feet, you know, unless there's a car in front of you with its brake lights on, you're not going to see them. It's pretty tough. And, of course, you know, we get the guy who rides around with his daylight running lights on, and he can't even remember to turn his lights on at night. So for sure you're not going to see him. because it happens every
day.
Well,
you'll meet him. You'll meet him, so you'll be able to see him then.
Hello. That's not the way you want to meet somebody. You don't want to meet somebody that way.
I'm in your back seat now. Sad.
Right. That's not a way you want to meet somebody.
It's done all the time. Nope.
And you say it every week. Turn your headlights on. But it's amazing. Yep. I see people at night all the time. No lights on. It just kills me. I was like, how can you not know to turn those things on? I mean, the dashboard doesn't even light up in the car very well.
Of the cars that I see, they're first, when they come out of a parking lot, a lit parking lot, and the lights on the streets and stuff, and you'll see them come out of the parking lot, and they got the lights. You blink your lights, they don't even get the message. And then, after a while, you watch them just glance up in your rearview mirror, and you'll see them, all of a sudden, their lights will come on. So they do try to remember, but there's a lot of things to do. You have to be a full-time driver. You can't be thinking of something else while you're driving an automobile anymore. There's too much traffic in Tucson. There's too many potholes out. And if you want a traffic jam, go to work at about 7 o'clock in the morning. I don't care which way you go. And you've got lights. I've set through lights as many as five over on golf links. Just going in at the wrong time of the day, you know. And when you're semi-retired, you can pretty much control your time, but sometimes it just don't work out. Oh, I got to get a couple of ads in here. Parker Automotive, 520-323-1960, 5101 East Speedway. Absolutely a nice place to do business with. ParkerAutoAZ.com. Go to the website. That's Scott and Mike, and Scott's the service. Mike's the owner, and Mike's got his kids with him, too. They're not kids. They are to me, but they're not kids. And he's got a good high-tech shop over on 5101 East Speedway. He also has cars. He has tires. He can get you set up in full service. He does an excellent job on the customers, taking care of the customers. I've got some of my buddies in business club that are going to him. And because of the location that he's over closer than I am at Ajo and Country Club. And that, actually, I referred him over. So that's Parker Automotive. Excellent place. Phone number again, 520-323-1960. And then you have Automotive Specialist with Mr. Test First Don't Guess, 3611 West Island Road, Meredith 9. Brian was on a couple of weeks ago. Bookman's Plaza, west end of Bookman's Plaza. Excellent shop, full service, excellent diagnostician. He's pretty much seen everything that you can throw at him from a car. He loves the stuff. He works on Corvettes, you know, so he's sometimes I question his sanity, but he works on Corvettes, I guess, you know, and he figures them out because he's got one. And, but he's good technician. He's got the big alignment machine, works on the 1, 2, 3, 4 AC AC conditioners in the cars and stuff. I said, what else, Brian? But he's got all the equipment. He's got all the factory equipment for doing machine or reprogramming cars and stuff. There's still a lot of stuff that's involved in that. It used to be that you could actually hook up a scanner to it and reprogram one because it's fairly simple. You had your little membership, of course, to get the proprietary information. And now, according to Brian, he said things he used to be able to do on some of these late model vehicles in about 10 minutes turned out to be about an hour. And some of the stuff that goes on with just trying to reprogram computers. So that's to be understood. That's electronics. That's just electronics. That's the reason the backyard mechanic, I mean, you've got to have about probably at least $10,000 worth of analyzers and stuff if you plan on even finding what needs to be fixed. And then by the time you get through with all your trick tools, if you start a business right now, it costs about $350,000 to go into business in a garage, to get your tools, to get your lifts, to get everything going. So if you see a guy that's been around a while, he's got all these big equipment, all that stuff, that's part of what we have to do to stay in business and stay up with the automotive, the type of machinery that's been built and sold to the public. Somebody's got to fix it. And if all of it, the dealerships, they primarily work on cars that's no older than 3 years.
Hey, Jerry?
No older than 3 years, yep.
Sorry to interrupt, but I got a guy named Rick on there. He wants to pay you a compliment. Hang on. Go ahead, Rick.
Okay. Yeah, it's Vic, V-I-C.
Oh,
anyway.
Okay, Vic.
Yeah, I just want to give Jerry a very good compliment. I had to get a clutch put in my truck. Oh, it was the 1st of February. And I will tell you what, this is an old 88 Chevy one-ton granular four-speed system. And this thing is operating like a new truck now.
Oh, good. Good. Thank you for the kind words.
Well, it's real.
Hopefully.
I mean, they had to go in and not just change out the throw-out bearing, pressure plate, and clutch, but they put me in a new flywheel, and and they also had to put in those pivot points in there and smooth all that stuff up. And it made, when I first got in it, I thought there was something wrong. It's so easy to press down and release.
Well, they got all the swing pedal assembly and all their linkage and stuff straightened out because it does wear out with age. And,
yes, it does.
You replace all that stuff. And it's nice to be able, when you do a good job and everything works like it did when it was originally factory, when it come in. That's the name of the game. Try to keep you out there, keep you happy so that you feel comfortable in driving it and you feel safe and secure in it.
And I do. And I have your shop is the only place I've had the truck almost 4 years, and you're the only place I've taken it to, and I'm dang pleased with everything.
Well, thank you, sir. Appreciate that. I'll pass the word on to the guys.
All right. You take care of them.
Thanks, Vic.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Jerry.
What?
We got another guy named George wants to talk about washes.
Talk about what?
Washes?
Bring him on.
Go ahead, George.
George.
Morning, guys.
Good morning, George. Good.
Hey, I know the answer to all of this, but I wanted to talk about it, have you guys talk about it to educate the public.
Sure.
What I'm talking about is I was on my way home on Easter afternoon, Sunday, and I'm passing by the Pima County Fairgrounds, and you guys are probably familiar with the road, Houghton Road. There's dips there, and when the rain's going good, it starts to flow water across the road, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm smart enough to know to slow down and not blast through the flowing water. And another guy coming the other direction in a truck decides that he's going to do 60 miles an hour through that wash dip. And so what happens is I get my vehicle all covered with dirty, muddy water, and he's probably laughing,
that's
thinking
right,
it's funny. So I told my wife, you know, there's a reason you don't want to do that, not because my truck got all full of muddy water. It's what goes on underneath the vehicle with all that water. So if you guys could educate the public as to why, you know, what's the dangers of doing that to your vehicle when you blast through the water in the wash.
Okay. Okay. We can do that. Do you want to stay online?
Yes, sir.
All right, good. All right. Jim, you
yes.
tow these things when these people run through this, and I know, I'm like George, I know the answers to all of this. I want you to give them the tow version, the person that goes out and gets their butt off the side of the road and out of the fenders of the oncoming cars, and especially cover the turbo side of this hitting these mud holes.
Well, George, you bring up a super great point. I hope I can get all this coverage in the time left. I think like 15 minutes. So, you know, there's a couple things that go on. Well, there's a lot of things that go on. So, if you're driving down the road and oncoming traffic, you know, is coming your way, and you hit them with a lot of water, well, let's start with the first part. The water that you spray up on the other guy's vehicle will blind him, and I don't care how fast his windshield wipers are going, it's still going to blind him for probably about 2 seconds till his windshield wipers do a cleaning. Well, that can cause a crash just because somebody may misreact and turn crash into you because you just splashed them. It happens. Seen it. So if nothing else, forget about any damage that you're going to do to your vehicle by driving through the wash at that Mach 9. Take into consideration that you could cause an accident just because you thought it was funny. And You're never gonna think it's funny when you're sitting there on the side of the road and somebody's crashed into you or crashed in general because you caused it. That's never gonna be a funny situation for you. I know people do it. They swerve and they try and get the water up on them. Whatever. That situation is bad. I've been there and towed many like that. As far as going through the water at Mach 9, well, the water that you spray up on the other guy's windshield also sprays up under your vehicle because, well, as much the tire pushes the water both directions. It pushes it out and it pushes it in. So now you can push your water up under your car and into the air cleaners, into the fan belt. If you're in a particularly – and Houghton Road's a good one. That's a nice one. They're working on it out there, George.
Oh,
they're,
yeah.
they're trying to make it better, at least in the fairgrounds. But those low-lying areas – there's debris in them, sticks, rocks, twigs. Water is so tremendously powerful, especially under that kind of compression. So you'll push rocks, you'll push dirt, you'll push sticks right up into your motor. So best case, it just gets up in there, and hopefully it only floods out the motor, or hope it only you know, causes a little squeaking belt. Worst case, this is what Jerry was alluding to, you'll fill your turbocharger full of water because that vacuum cleaner out there going down the road sucks stuff at, like I said in the beginning, 65,000 RPMs. That thing will suck like a Hoover vacuum cleaner like you never saw, and it sucks. It loves to suck water in. Well, now you have water that goes through the turbocharger. And by the way, folks, water is non-compressible. So it goes through the turbocharger, through the intercooler, into the intake, and into the cylinders. Now, so here's what happens. So water's not compressible, and cars have a specific compression ratio, which means the piston goes up to the top of the cylinder, and the air is compressed, and then it fires, right? We're all pretty sure of that whole scenario. We're all familiar with that that technique. Well, when the water is in there, it doesn't compress. Something's going to move, okay? If you by chance luck out and a valve is open, it'll blow back out a valve. But more than likely not, because it's going to compress. And you get what's called hydrostatic lockup. So, well, what happens in hydrostatic lockup? Hydrostatic lockup compresses water, and it either bends the connecting rod, breaks the piston, breaks the wrist pin, or breaks the head. Pushes the head right off the cylinder. Takes the head bolts, busts them right off, and good night, Irene. Your motor is junk. If you think that you're just going to put a connecting rod in a motor, guess again, you're going to pull it out, and you're in for a whole new story. And yes, I know it seems crazy, but the connecting rod will actually bend. When Jerry talks about race cars, we used to have race cars, 4-bolt mains, forged cranks, forged connecting rods, right? Well, today, metallurgy is much better than it was 50 years ago. Connecting rods may not be forged. They may be cast. They may be forged, but they're really, really light because fuel economy is top priority. So we make every rotating mass as light as possible so it takes as little energy as possible to make it work. That's why we can get 3 horsepower per cubic inch when we used to only get 1 horsepower per cubic inch 50 years ago, okay? So that little connecting rod is not designed to compress water, and it will bend. And here's the thing. It may bend 0.01 of an inch, and that's just enough to knock the compression ratio down to where you now have a miss. Now you'll have a cylinder miss. You'll have a code 305, you'll have a cylinder miss, and you won't be able to find it to save your life until you do a compression test. And even then, you might not see it. You actually do put a gauge in there and check top dead center and measure it. Pull the heads off and check it, then you can see it. So that kind of damage is very, very expensive, very expensive. So then, assuming that we didn't get the turbocharger, as we run the water up into the fender wells, through the fender wells into the motor, right, we've soaked all the electrical components. And, they're designed to handle moisture, but they're not designed to handle submerged water. Why do we know this? Because every car that comes out of a flood gets totaled because everything gets shorted out in flooded water. Now you're talking about pushing water through the undercarriage of a car at very high force. We're not talking about running out of garden hose, folks. We're talking like it's running out of a pressure washer, at 2,000 PSI. It runs up there. So now it gets into your connection. Oh, great. So let's go to Brian Fuller. Oh, resistance in the connection went up. It went up. The computer sees a bad voltage signal to the sensor. The sensor throws a bad voltage out back to the computer. It tries to compensate because it thinks something's going wrong. Oh, now you got all these codes and lights. Great. Fantastic. Oh, that's even more fun. Chase that down. You want to talk about some time? Folks, if you think chasing wiring down is an easy thing to do, guess again. If you can get the connectors apart, because they're a real dog, they're real hard, if you can get them apart without breaking them, and you can get them off the firewall, you can peel them off the firewall because of all the clips they got on them, and not cut your hands into shreds, and even if you got good mechanics gloves on, you're in for a treat. That's a true testament to working. Start pulling connectors apart and see how fun that is. Oh, well, which one is it? I don't know. But there's like 43 under the hood of the car, so you get to do all of them. That means O2 sensors. That means bulkhead connectors. That means AC connectors, injector connectors, NOx sensors, oil pressure sensors, all that stuff. You can check every single one of those. Because now you've introduced resistance to connectors that wasn't there because the water shot up in there at friggin' 2,000 PSI. Okay. So, all right. So let's say we didn't do any of that stuff. We were fortunate enough not to have any of those things happen. So what happens when you hit water going down the road? Well, you hydroplane. And it happens. It may, you may... And, oh, by the way, you hit water in a wash, with fans, you're really going to hydroplane. You're going to hydroplane like on ball bearings. So you may fly down the road and hit that thing at 60, and all of a sudden you're off in the ditch. You're off in the ditch upside down because, well, you couldn't control the vehicle because there was nothing to control. You are now a glider. You're a glider on the side of the road, and you, in as much as you turn that steering wheel, you're a passenger in your own car. You basically gave control to Mother Nature, and Mother Nature said, hey, watch this. You know, she didn't say hold my beer and watch this, because that's effectively what you did. You said, here, hold my beer and watch this. But she took over and said, hey, I'll show you how this really plays out. And you go bobbing off down the road at 60 miles an hour, and now you're basically, you know, a glider flying through the air, and you crash. And hopefully you don't roll over, but you crash. So what did we learn with all this? Well, you could cause a wreck. You could cause a wreck for somebody. You could tear up your car. You could damage the motor. You could damage the electrical components, or you could crash yourself. So back to George's point, how really intelligent is it to go through those washes at 60 miles an hour? Oh, by the way, if there's barricades up, somebody who has more knowledge of the situation than you has went out there and said, hey, don't go here. We put a barrier up to stop you from going here because we've already determined that driving through this is hazardous to your health. So don't do it. So when the barrier's up, don't go, oh, buddy, I know better than anybody. I can build a car better than any engineer out there on the planet. I know how to drive better than any race car driver. I'll just drive right around that thing. Okay. Well, if you live – Hot Road's a great one, but I'll tell you the best one. The Cañada del Oro Wash. CDO Wash at up by La Cholla. You drive across that when it's raining, and you know what you're going to do? You're going to wind up at the CDO Bridge at La Cholla, stuck in the wash, full of mud, full of sand. How do I know this? Again, because I've been there and pulled them out where they are up, their trucks or the cars are up to the roof full of sand. There is nothing left of that thing except it's completely full of sand. The interior is full of sand. Every single compartment is full of sand. The in between the fender wells is full of sand. In between the door panels is full of sand. The car is completely flooded out. Why they have big gates there? They actually have steel gates there that they close when it rains, so you can't go through. They don't just put barriers up. They actually close the road with gates. And no, you will not go through there. If you think you're going to go through there, you have got another thing coming, because the county will come out there and wreak havoc with you. So, to back to George's point of driving through the intersections poorly, don't. Slow down. It literally will take you – if you think it's funny, there's nothing funny about driving down the road trying to cause somebody else harm. There's nothing funny about that. If you think that's fun, you shouldn't be driving, ever. If you think splashing somebody else's car with water is fun – you shouldn't be driving. That's not what needs to happen. You need to operate in a safe manner and slow down. So just saying, if you think it's funny, you're going to wind up where it's not funny. And then you're going to be having all these excuses of what went wrong, and we'll all know what happened. You went wrong. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so while this was happening –
Go ahead, George.
What I was going to say, is as I had to run my windshield wipers to clear off all the muddy water off my windshield, and I got angry. My wife said, "Well, he didn't do it on purpose." And I said, "Oh no, he sped up to time when we would hit the water at the same time." So it was a game. And I told her, I said, "Most vehicles aren't designed to do what he was doing." To your guys' points, you guys have pointed that out clearly. So, yeah, it's a game for some people. It's a dangerous game, and I'm glad you had a chance to speak to it today. So hopefully others are listening and will heed the warning.
Well, I appreciate you bringing that up.
The other thing is if you've got roads like that and you've got a crack in the asphalt and you've got water running over it, when you hit it with a 3,000-pound or 6,000-pound vehicle or 8,000-pound vehicle, the water does not compress. It goes in and it will implode from the inside out and push that asphalt out, creating even a bigger hole. So, you know, you can't tell if it's got a pothole there. You can't see it. And, you know, that big truck coming through there. And I'll tell you something about these big 4x4s that have big tires. When you look at these tires on these big 4x4s, and you go down the road on a dry road and you lock that thing down, you have four little skid marks that are about 2 inches wide that look like on a motorcycle or something. Those big tires like that, they work good in the mud. But when you take them and you put them in water, they are designed to actually shed the water from the side. But what they do is it still compresses, but now it's got a little extra force to get it out from under the tires, like Jim was saying. You got probably 2,000 PSI on some of that stuff, depending on how the guy did it and how fast it is, how big the vehicle is. But he can't tell what's under that road as far as a pothole either. If he hits a pothole and sets that thing on a hydroplane in a different direction, he's going to be all over somebody. It could be the car that's behind you. It could be anything. So, yeah, that's kind of like driving at night with the lights off. It's kind of dangerous. But if you see really something dangerous coming down the road, a big dude like that, they probably said, all right, this is not water. I can cover this. I jerked a bumper off of a truck trying to pull him out of a tank of dirty wash one time. I ripped it off. Because I told him it's gonna tear your hind end of your truck off. No, it'll be good, guy. I'm telling you. It did. So anyway, don't drive, George. Thanks for the call, buddy. Hopefully that'll help, and we'll put that on a regular basis when the water comes up. All right, we're out of time, Jim. You know, Simmons is still looking for employees. Anybody looking? 884-0217-520. Don't forget, I'm going to bring up next week, we're going to cover the Rodgers Show down at Pima Community College, and we're going to see if we can't promote that thing. Last time we did it down there, I had a lot of communication issues because of metal buildings. Wasn't their fault. I just didn't have ESPN check it out before I went down there to do it. So.